Welcome to the Gynedborn podcast. I'm Peggy Reynolds, and in this podcast, I'll be exploring some of the themes and stories behind Lajos Janáček's The Cunning Little Vixen. Some operas come out of very strange backgrounds, but Janáček's The Cunning Little Vixen has a beginning that was stranger than most. The initial germ for the opera was a comic strip serialised in a local newspaper published in Brno. In 1920, the paper had bought the rights to some 200 line drawings by the illustrator Stanislav Lolek. They are simple drawings, very 1920s in feel. In one frame, the forester, in neat boots and a jaunty feather in his hat, picks up the reluctant vixen by the scruff of the neck. In the next, she's tucked under his arm, but somehow we know that she's not entirely submissive. The music writer, Gavin Plumley, tells how Janáček first came across the story.
Janáček first discovered the cunning little vixen through his maid, or that's what we're led to believe by her, at least. He was working away in his room in Brno, and she was supposedly working next door, but actually she was reading the local paper, Lidové noviny, and was laughing at a cartoon strip. Janáček asked her why she was laughing, and she said, oh, it's because of Bystrouška, which is the Czech name for the cunning little vixen. And that paper had actually proved to be inspirational to Janáček before. He'd created a song cycle called The Diary of One Who Disappeared, which was based on poems that had been printed in that paper. So it wasn't totally unusual that Janáček would be kind of drawn to it. But nothing could prepare us really for how drawn he would become over the next few years in his creation of The Cunning Little Vixen. And when the cartoon strip was then eventually novelised and published in book form, Janáček began work on his libretto, working directly from the text.
While he was creating that libretto, Janáček also gave himself over to studying the animal world. His maid, again, is the witness here, as she tells us that Janáček often took himself to the woods or to the park, listening to birdsong and noting down its modulations. He also deliberately set out to study foxes in the wild, as Gavin Plumley explains.
Shortly after the opera previous to Vixen, which was called Katia Kabanova, Janáček bought a cottage up in Hochwaldy, which is where he was born. And during the genesis of Vixen, he went up to stay in this cottage and would frequently go up into the hills and the woods around Hochwaldy to experience nature. And there's a very funny tale of him going to see foxes in their natural habitat. There was a gamekeeper in the village who he got on very well with and had known for many years. And he arranged to go up with him into the forest. And not being completely wise about the ways of animals or how one had to behave, Janáček turned up in a bright white linen suit, which would have attracted an enormous amount of attention, obviously, and probably frightened the foxes away. And when they did eventually get up into the forest and saw the foxes, Janáček made such a fuss and was so excited about seeing them in their natural habitat that he scared them away anyway.
Like the comic strip that inspired it, The Cunning Little Vixen is a story about animals and humans. At the beginning, the forester catches the vixen in the woods. He takes her home and ties her up. But she escapes, finds a new home in a badger's set, and mates with a dog fox. In the last act, she is killed. But the forester sees her children in the woods and recognises the renewal of the life cycle. Julian Johnson is head of music at Royal Holloway, University of London. As he explains, it seems like a simple story, but it is still very profound.
Well, on the surface of it, The Cunning Little Vixen is, of course, about the beauty of nature and Janáček's love for the natural world in which he lived. And on the surface, a story almost like a fairy tale about the animals of the forest and the people who live in a village close by. But under the surface, there are other themes, I think. This is a story about old age, about getting older and the acceptance of getting older. And it's an opera about acknowledging desire and the letting go of desire. There's a rather sad love story runs through the middle of it. But at the heart of it, this sense that nature has this wonderful, cycling, renewable life and energy and vitality, so that even the death of the main character herself, the vixen, is hardly marked because it's kind of swept up in this much, much bigger picture of the opera.
The music of The Cunning Little Vixen is unusual, not just because there are sounds and chords that do seem to mimic the natural world, but because the musical phrases evolve and grow organically, suggesting warmth or cold, darkness or light, winter or spring. This is one such passage, the orchestral interlude from Act One. The little vixen has been caught in the woods by the forester and brought home to be tied up beside the dog kennel. Darkness falls. Gradually, the mournful vixen falls asleep. As she sleeps, she's transformed into a human, a beautiful young girl. Then as daylight comes again, she's once again a vixen, ready to take life on its own terms. When Leos Janáček wrote The Cunning Little Vixen in the mid-1920s, he was in love with a much younger woman called Carmilla Stoslova. He'd met her in 1917 at a resort where she was holidaying with her antique dealer husband. This was outwardly quite a calm, one-sided affair, respectful and flattered on Carmilla's side, passionate and all-consuming in the composer's mind. Carmilla was the inspiration for much of Janáček's late music, especially his last work, the String Quartet No. 2, called Intimate Letters. But Carmilla is there in his operas too. She was Katya Kabanova, trapped by rigid social expectations. She was Emilia Marti in the Mercopolis case, eternally young and emotionally distant. And she is both the little vixen and Terenka, the gypsy girl desired by all the men in the story, who's full of life and passionate commitment. "You stand behind every note," Janáček wrote to Carmilla. "You, living, forceful, loving. The fragrance of your body, the glow of your kisses, no, really, of mine. Those notes of mine kiss all of you. They call for you passionately." By removing his music to the sphere of the animal world, Janáček frees his own desires. Melly Still is the director of Glyndebourne's 2012 production of The Cunning Little Vixen.
The vixen is really, she's an expression of everything that isn't human, because the humans in this opera tend to suffer a lot. They yearn, they have longings, they're frustrated and a little bit bitter, their love life doesn't go according to plan or never is fulfilling in any way. And the fox, by contrast, the vixen, by contrast, and her family and her world are without any of these human sufferings.
And the vixen and the dog fox don't have the problems that beset the human condition. At the end of Act Two, they quickly come to a mutual agreement and retire into the badger's burrow. They are married by the woodpecker, and the voice of the forest calls its approval. You can probably hear, even in that short extract, how Janáček uses folk tunes and rhythms. This was partly a matter of nationalism, for Janáček loved his native country at a time when that kind of devotion was a complicated matter for Czechs. Gavin Plumley.
Janáček was a fervent nationalist. He was born into a principality within an empire. The Czechs were second-class citizens in their own home, ruled over by the Habsburgs as they had been for centuries. And Janáček grew up indignant about that. He even expressed it by not taking the German-owned trams in Brno and would wait for a Czech tram to come along before getting on it. And a lot of his music is a celebration in many ways of the Czech spirit, but it was also a realistic celebration of the Czech spirit. He wasn't rose-tinted in his view about what Czech people were like.
Leoš Janáček may have been a realist, but he was also an important scholar of both folklore and traditional music. He specialised in Moravian, Lakian and Slovakian songs, and in 1909 he actually purchased an Edison phonograph to help in his collecting. Professor Julian Johnson.
Of course, Janáček's musical style comes out of Czech music, in the sense that he actually did. He was one of the earliest people to go and collect folk song music and notate it. His Lakian dances are a very good example of that from the 1890s, a very early sign of his investment, if you like, in the music of the people of the area in which he lived. And all his life he insisted on living in the town of Brno in Moravia. He didn't even go to Prague. Prague was a kind of foreign city to him almost, let alone Vienna or Paris. So he insisted on staying within that region in which he grew up and drew on the materials of folk music in terms of the kind of modal harmonic language, the rhythms of the folk dances that he would have heard. And above all, and this is the most subtle thing and it's hard to pull out of the music, the speech rhythms of the local language, as it were, the Moravian dialect.
His nationalist instincts, Janáček's The Cunning Little Vixen was first performed in Brno in November 1924. But the composer himself did not have long to live. The story goes that in July 1928, when Camilla and her son came to visit him at his country home at Hochwaldy, the boy went missing in the wood, and in searching for him in the dew and the damp, the composer caught a cold which developed into pneumonia. He was given a large public funeral and, at the composer's own request, the last passages of The Cunning Little Vixen were performed. In the third and final act, we see the poacher Harashta preparing for his marriage to the desirable Tarinka. He sets a trap for the vixen and succeeds in shooting her and makes a present of her pelt to his bride. When the fur is worn by Tarinka, the forester recognises his vixen and is filled with sadness. Back in the forest, he thinks about the passage of time, about love and life and loss. Before we hear that piece of music, first Melly Still and then Gavin Plumley.
In the final scene when the forester returns to the forest, to his favourite tree, there's a quote in the libretto, there's something that he says which is really sums up, I think, the experience, which is to do with his awakening, really, his sudden awareness about the beauty of life itself and how he's not been present in that life. He's not been aware of it, if you like. You know, he's just been struggling from day to day, moaning, complaining, getting drunk, beating creatures, probably his wife, you know, and, you know, having a bit of a laugh with his friends. But it's not been a fantastically notable life. But he shifts and he goes back and he sits there and he's able to see and listen. And he sits there and he says, "Still, I'm happy when the evening sun peeps through. How enchanting the forest looks. When the nymphs return to their summer homes, darting about in next to nothing, they'll be mad with love at the first sign of spring, greeting each other with tears of joy. Once more they'll pour dew of happiness over 1,000 petals, primroses, meadow pea and anemones. Men and women will pass this spot in silent awe and understand the bliss they feel is a gift from heaven."
It's so touching, and there's the kind of line where he says people will bow in holy silence and all the joy of nature will unfold. And that comes not from anywhere else, it's the forester's sense of understanding. And that kind of change in a man that was so kind of wearied and bored by life to being amazed by it. that is ultimately an optimistic message. And I think it's a huge celebration of both the dreariness and the glory of life.
Oh, yeah.